Heather McDonald has got the juiciest scoop. When you're on the road, when you're on the go, Juicy Scoop is the show to know. She talks Hollywood tales, her real life Mr. Segment Serial Data and Serial Sister. You'll be addicted and addicted fast to the number one tabloid real life podcast. Listen in, listen up. Woo, woo. Heather McDonald. Juicy Scoop.
Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. Well, we've got a big show today. I've got Dr. Drew, but more importantly, Kravis is married. Yes, the couple whose tongues are entwined for now a lifetime, hopefully. It is official. They are in Vegas. They were there for the Grammys. They stayed an extra night. They got a third night free, I guess, and went down to the little chapel with the Elvis impersonator, got married. Courtney sharing like 10 photos. 7 of them are making out. From their event of getting married, it was, she just had a little thing of roses, hair in a pony, sunglasses for most of it. He wore sunglasses throughout the whole thing, it looks like. Leather jackets. And, you know, I think it's really kind of interesting because how does it work? Like, I wonder, is the pressure off? Is it almost like once you, now if she has a big wedding, you know, that they film for the Hulu show and all the kids are there and everybody's there, I wonder if maybe she just knowing herself is like, you know what, let's just get married because it'll make planning the actual like wedding so much more fun. I'm curious to hear from people that have done that. Does it like make it less exciting or less pressure or more about the fact that you have already committed and it's not leading up to this big moment of like the olden days of, you know, is the bride going to run away? Is the guy, you know, someone going to object? Like, there's none of that. So, you know, it's interesting because I remember that one of the first times I met Courtney, she told me about how she was the one who found out that Kim got married to her first husband in Vegas when she was like 18, that somebody alerted her to it and she found it on the internet and was like, oh my God, found her marriage license. And you know, it was a big issue for their parents and everything that she did it that way. And but, you know, this is a totally different story. They're both have kids with other people. They're madly in love. And I think it's really great. So then there was a couple of articles like, oh, the marriage license isn't 100% or there's no prenup. All of that, we don't know. And I'm sure a Vegas situation, they can get a postnup now or whatever, and it really won't matter. The point is they let the world know that they're committed to spending the rest of their lives together. And now it's like really have a big fancy wedding with the sisters being bridesmaids, the kids all in it. I'm ready for it. I'm ready to see that. Erika Jayne not having a great week, you guys. So I'm going to explain what's going on with this lawsuit as good as I can. So Erika Jayne is named in a $50 million racketeering lawsuit. This guy, Edelson, he is the attorney that was the local representation in the state of Illinois. Their partner was Tom Girardi's firm to represent plaintiffs in the horrible plane crash situation. They got screwed. Their firm got screwed. Their clients got screwed. Because they did win all this money. Tom Girardi's firm took all the money and never gave it to them. And so now we're at this place where their clients have gotten the money because more lawsuits that were in the works, the Girardi firm won. And with that money that's come in since this whole story broke, their clients got paid. But now that Edelson firm is suing Tom Girardi along with his son-in-law, his daughter's husband, who was a partner, a couple other partners, Erika Jayne. There's several people in this involved in the law firm. And what Edelson is claiming in this lawsuit is that he believes this is a Ponzi scheme kind of operation. He used those words on Kate Casey's podcast that I just listened to. She interviewed him directly. And, you know, the question is, okay, we see why, you know, why he's naming all these people. But this is like a racketeering case, a fraud case. This is basically, he's saying they ran this law firm like a Ponzi scheme for the last 10 years. And he believes all these other people, not just Tom Girardi, knew what was going on. And they got to this point because they've discovered so much stuff. I assume now that it's been out there for a year and a half, 2 years, I assume many people have come forward and said, I've got more information now that I feel safe that I can speak, because I think, you know, if you worked for them, if you worked for Erica, they knew how litigious and how powerful and how like revengeful they were. So I think they never wanted to speak about them. But I think since all this has come out, they probably have a lot of information. He also said there's they subpoenaed a lot of footage from Bravo that wasn't necessarily used in the show that we've seen, but extra footage that they're going to use, in which they believe she knew what was going on and was accepting money that she, I guess, might have been aware of or not. But there's evidence of her accepting money, is what I'm assuming from this, from not being a lawyer but reading it, that was actually due, that were actually clients' money that was stolen from them. So now her defense could be, again, I was a dancer. I was a performer. I met Mr. Girardi. I told him it's expensive to be me. He knew that. He let me spend whatever I want. I didn't know. I knew what he said. One of the things he said was there was a moment, I don't remember if it was on Watch What Happens Live or the reunion. I want to say it was Watch What Happens Live, where this actual law situation, legal situation with Edelson came up. And it was before the LA Times article and everything. And Erica said, not relevant. It's already been settled and they apologized. And so that's a blatant lie. So it's like they're saying, how many times has she lied on camera, you know, maybe lied in the show? Is she going to lie once she has to actually answer questions in a deposition? And but again, if you're going to take it that she was just that wife that got to spend whatever she wanted and never asked questions where it came from, he may have also, Tom Girardi said, you know, if anyone asks about that, you know, we already settled it and they apologized. Okay. I don't think she was like, can I see where they apologize? You know, can I see where they apologize, Tom? No. She's like, let me pat the puss and get on my way to Watch What Happens Live. I don't know. But I'm thinking if they bothered to name her, there's going to be some very questionable things that they found, whether it's emails, texts, I don't know. People coming forward, people who've worked for her, people that were paid out of one fund versus another from a hairdresser to, that's where we're going to, where it's going to get really interesting. However, I don't know how much we're going to actually see of this juicy stuff on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, because actually it's kind of been dead as far as Erica Girardi news these last 6 months that they've been filming. Of course, then the show will start airing. I heard it was airing May, not sure if that's true. And then at the end, you know, then they'll do the reunion. So a lot could happen. They may throw in other extra episodes at the end if this gets really juicy. I don't know where it is. But I know they had the quote-unquote final party in which Kathy Hilton did not attend, and that Kathy Hilton is like stopped filming halfway through. And there's the big controversy of what happened in Aspen, that there was something that she, you know, the rumor is that Kathy said a derogatory term in which was not caught on camera, but that Erica and Lisa Rinna have witnessed it and have talked a lot about it. And that's going to be the new, you know, Aspen Gate story. I don't know. So there we go with that. So we'll see what happened and how she reacts. And if she ever does just go, hey, you know, again, I did not know this was going. I did not. I'll get into my voice. I didn't know this was going on. Okay. I've been through a lot. Tom's house is broken into, and it was snowing, and my son came and the car rolled four times, actually 14. So it was really, I've been through a lot. Now I don't know what's going on, Sutton. I don't know what she's going to say. You know, it'll be very interesting to see. But you know, one thing she could say is like, I'm furious too. How do you think I feel? I was told I could spend all this money. I'm grossed out that you stole it. She does say that he left me with this mess, but how is she going to really defend herself? And what will the attorney say? So good luck. Speaking of other legal news. So Britney Spears' attorney just was in court fighting the fact that Lynn Spears, her mom, is asking that the Britney Spears estate pay Lynn's attorney fees, which is up to $660,000. And Britney's attorney is saying, hell no. You know, everyone has bled this chick dry. You got to live in a beautiful house for all these years in Louisiana. She paid your utilities down to your telephone bill, paid everything. No, we're not paying your legal fees too. Lynn Spears is saying, but Britney wanted me to help on her behalf. And I hired these attorneys to help her get out of this conservatorship. And therefore, I can't pay these people the $660,000. So, you know, it's not going to be a fun Mother's Day, is all I'm saying. I don't see a big brunch at the Cheesecake Factory happening. Well, they could just have it at their house because, you know, Chris Frangel is obsessed with the fact that her house is very, very Cheesecake Factory decor inside. Okay. I watched Real Housewives of New Jersey. And you guys, this is what I think. Listen, sometimes people's lives are boring. Sometimes being a real housewife, which I am, sometimes my life isn't that juicy. So in their defense, this is their life. But for me sitting on my bed, it is getting very hard to keep my eyes open. Last week, we had to watch 23 minutes of an actual baseball game. Okay. Last night we had, let's just go through the list. We had, the main thing was Margaret's mother, Marge Sr., you know, is going to turn 75. I'm going to have a beautiful party for her. And, you know, she was a Hungarian immigrant. So we got a big history lesson about Hungarian immigrants, which is inspiring, but it's not my usual, you know, housewife fun. Dolores's mother is still on FaceTime recovering from a surgery. Melissa's daughter had a knee issue from cheerleading. We didn't know if she wanted to cheer again, but she is at least going to therapy or going to a workout class, which we got to see. Melissa constantly embarrasses her daughter. She goes, oh, we had a pool party here yesterday with, I forgot the daughter's name, with my daughter and all of her, Melissa's daughter.
Oh. Anyway. Antonio?
Oh, yes. So, yeah, we had a party here with Antonio and all her friends in skimpy bikinis. So then Antonio's like, Mom, I mean, Melissa, do you not get this? Now her friends are going to be like, we just watched the show last night. First of all, we were not wearing skimpy bikinis, or that is so embarrassing, or why would you say that? And I mean, oh. And so, and then the new girl, Tiki Barber's wife, no one knows her name, and Tiki Barber, they come with their cute little daughter and they have like the shortest lunch ever. Tiki's dying to get out of there. The little girl got her suit on and then never went in the pool. I kind of felt really bad. Anyway, the little girl, she's got a tutor for kindergarten. Now we're literally have 4 minutes left of the show and we finally get to the Hungarian party and all the guys make up and Marge dances and Marge Senior dances and Marge gives a nice speech and that's it. The only juicy part of the entire episode was next week's episode where they're in Nashville and Louis is there and Teresa's there and Teresa accuses Margaret at a big table saying, I think you put out the rumors about Louis. And Marge is like, you're diabolical. You're a disgusting human being. I didn't put out those rumors, you know. Which she didn't. They were all out there. He's got an ex-wife and two ex-fiancés, two of which are named Vanessa. It's out there, okay? And she is like, argh! And she throws all the drinks on Marge, who's wearing a white dress. So you're like, oh my God, this is like some really good cinematic things. Like, I mean, to say, you know, it's like in movies where like the person's wearing a white dress and then there's like a shootout, like the end of Boogie Nights, the guy's wearing a white suit and he goes to the donut shop. Sorry to ruin it for you. There's a shootout in it. But anyway, it's like, oh, you know, wearing white. Anyway,
a lot of like cranberry vodka drinks go flying at Marge, and that's Margaret, and that's what we get to see next week. I want to say something. I know people aren't a fan of Louis, but Louis deserves $1 million paycheck at the end of the season, because otherwise they're literally, we would be watching more doctor's appointments. Jackie, you know, is going through her anorexia struggle, which I think it's an important thing. I don't think we need to see a whole bunch of it. As just someone sitting home, it's not something I want to see, but I do think it's important. She got to have ice cream for the first time. That was about a 9-minute scene about ice cream. I mean, we only have so much time in the world, but I just want to put it out there to thank Teresa and Louis. And, you know, and people are annoyed that she is a housewife. What do you want them to do? You gave the producers a pile of poo and they made a chocolate cake out of it. Okay? Good luck. I also want to tell you guys, I think it's time. It's the Lenten season. Okay? It's Easter. Do your Christian service. Why don't you share this episode so easily with a friend? All you do is take your device that you're listening to this on your iPhone, and you see where the description is in the right-hand corner are three little dots. Just tap that. You're going to see share episodes. Tap that, and all of your best contacts are going to come up. You can email it. You can text it to a friend. Send it to a friend. Change their life. Watch the world get better for you by sharing Juicy Scoop. I will appreciate it. Your friend will appreciate it. You will be the hero that introduced them to the world of Juicy Scoop. So thank you for being a Juicy Scooper and sharing the show. And now, a very juicy episode with the infamous Dr. Drew. Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I have one of the original Juicy Scoopers, a real friend, right. Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Good to see you.
Husband.
Yeah.
Father.
Making me sound better than I am.
Podcast host, radio host,
oh,
doctor.
Yeah. You know what? Susan will kill me if I don't put I'm the least promotional person in the world. So let me get that out of the way because I will forget. Please watch, go to drdrew.tv and watch the streaming show that my lovely wife produces and participates in. And don't forget Dr. Drew After Dark, which is very popular at drdrew.com. You get it there. So
there you go. Okay. You have a lot going on, yeah, as always. So, I mean, there's a lot to discuss.
Yes.
And one of the things I put out to my Juicy Scoopers to discuss with you is something I've noticed because you've been doing these TikTok videos and stuff. And I think so many people have been throwing the word narcissism around.
Right.
I think I've gained a greater understanding of it in like the last year.
Good.
Of people talking about it.
It's a big topic.
But it's a big topic. It's a big topic with celebrities. Yeah. And I feel like some people use it a little, it may be being used too much.
It is, yeah.
Along with gaslighting.
Gaslighting.
And so I kind of want to go through all of that.
All right.
But my first thing with narcissism is I didn't really understand what it was. I was at Chelsea Lately. You came on as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
You had a book in which you could take a test.
Correct.
About your narcissism.
Yes.
So, and right away, you know, I think Chelsea was like, oh, Heather's going to be like off the charts or something. And when I took it, I didn't score high at all.
That doesn't surprise me.
And one of the things that stuck out to me that makes me kind of understand it the best, because I think sometimes people think it's a vanity thing.
That's vanity is a feature, a symptom, but it's not the thing. Yeah.
Like wanting to look cute.
Yeah, vanity can be with or without narcissism, right?
Right, yeah.
You have some vanity without narcissism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, vanity's not bad.
But it was just, I remember one of the questions that then made me, when I looked at the people that scored high on it.
Chelsea.
Yeah, it was. Yes. And even this other guy that I really like, you know, enjoyed and stuff, was the question, do you think you're the smartest one in the room?
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, that is so interesting, you know, because it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm the smartest one in the room oftentimes, and certainly I want to get other people's opinions and all that. But when I think about people that I do believe fall into the narcissistic realm, that's a big one. I know everything and I'm right.
Yeah. And it's a forced choice questionnaire. So the other question against that is something like, people like my advice and come to me often. Something like that. So it's almost the same thing, but one has a narcissistic flavor to it, which is I'm the smartest person in the room. That's it.
Got it.
And people that choose that and stand by it and don't see that as kind of whatever, that's narcissism. That's a feature of narcissism. But here's what I'm going to tell a little story.
Yes.
So I started working in a psychiatric hospital in 1985. And when I was first there, I ended up working there for 3 decades and took over their addiction services and their medical services and things over the years. So I spent a lot of time really working a lot there. And at the beginning, you fill out these sheets, these diagnostic sheets when people came in. And axis one is the mood disturbances and the bipolar and that kind of stuff. Axis two is the personality disorders. And when I first got there, I'd read these things and there'd be personality disorders would be all over the place. Dependent personality, obsessive compulsive personality, paranoid personality. Around 1988, I noticed it started shifting where most people were the narcissistic disorders, which are called cluster B, borderline personality, sociopathic personality, narcissistic personality disorder. And by the mid-90s, everybody had that. That's the only thing you saw. And it was then from then on. So why this sudden shift? And narcissism is not a common thing. At the beginning of the middle of the 19th century, they debated whether it existed. It's not that common, but it's a common outcome from adverse childhood experiences. And now I think people understand that divorce, domestic violence, having a parent in prison, substance use in the home, these are ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and they result in narcissistic strategies to adapt, to survive these situations. And so the first thing I want to say is don't think about these traits, these personality traits as all bad. Right? People go, oh, it's narcissist. Well, if you're a fighter pilot, I freaking want a narcissist in the seat. Thank you very much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there are situations where narcissism is not just adaptive. It's something you really want. Now, if you're in an intimate relationship with that person, it can get a little challenging. But it's not all bad. The bad part is as people accumulate more and more narcissistic traits, and again, not disorder, just traits. Very few people actually have the disorder, but lots of people have the traits. As you develop more traits, you have a proclivity to empathic failure. So you start – your feelings – when you're a narcissist, feelings don't matter to you. They're like, whatever. You know, they don't matter. And when feelings don't matter, believe me, yours really don't matter. And they can fail in their ability to have any empathic attunement, which is not good when you're in a relationship. And they're prone to envy. And envy is different than jealousy. Jealousy is – as I define these things – jealousy is Heather's got a cool podcast that makes me I wish I had that, makes me uncomfortable. Envy, and I'm going to work hard to get it. Envy is Heather has something I have. I got to destroy her. I got to bring her down. That's envy. And think about all the religious injunctions against envy, right? Every scripture, every
One of the seven deadly.
It's the one that's always emphasized, right? Because it's so destructive to society, and we are deep in it now. When I wrote that book you're talking about, I'm sorry to ramble on here, but when I wrote that book you're talking about, I wanted to write a chapter about pre-revolutionary France. That was the only period of history I could find where there was so much childhood trauma, particularly sexualizing and sexual abuse and parents abandoning their kids.
What year is in France?
Pre-revolutionary France. Like, you know, just like 18 – what would that be? 1780.
What was going on?
You know, all the salons and all the kids were – something like 4 out of 5 kids were just left in orphanages. I mean, just horrible stuff for children.
Okay.
And it sort of went unnoticed. And guess what happened? Guillotines came out because when people have envy – they'll start destroying each other unless they have a collective way to focus their aggression, a scapegoat. And I thought, oh, we're going to have guillotines. I knew it. I didn't know Twitter would be the mechanism, that cancel society would be it. But I knew we were going to have it, and I wanted to write about it. And they were, no, too speculative. You can't do that. Now I sound like I'm just saying it as though I was going to write about it.
Right.
But know that cancel culture is the modern guillotine, and it comes from all that envy, and that comes from all the injury and narcissism.
Which,
interesting, right?
Because social media is available where everyone can speak their mind.
They can act out their aggression, and they can act out collectively. It feels good. Societies, you know, have a way of using scapegoating as tying people together, the tribe. So they focus on an out group, an out person that focuses the aggression away from the in group. You bond to the in group against the out group. It's very primitive. It's very stupid. It's not the way to run a society. But here we are.
I've had someone say that I love myself too much.
You?
Yes.
Let's think about that.
Can you love yourself too much?
Well, it's the whole – all the rhetoric around loving yourself, I find – I don't think this,
I feel like everyone's telling you to do that.
Exactly.
Take care of yourself. Put your mask on
gotta
first
love
before
yourself.
Your kid.
Got to love yourself first before you love somebody else.
Body positivity. Love, 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 love.
No, I
and
think.
And then it's like, oh, she just loves herself too much.
Yeah. So most of that love yourself stuff I find, and this is the kindest way I can describe it, distasteful. And again, not very accurate. So you can't. Say, what are you talking about? Yeah, you should like parts of yourself. You should integrate yourself. You should have, you know, all parts of yourself. You should be using all parts of yourself. But you really shouldn't be worrying about loving yourself. I mean, you should like yourself, or you should like what you do in the world. But really, your focus should be what you can do to help other people, what you can do in the world.
Yeah.
And you'll naturally kind of like yourself. It just happens that way. So you love yourself too much. I can sign off on that. So why don't I just give you that one? Heather loves herself too much, everybody. That's it.
I do enjoy myself.
I was going to say, that's what I see, is that you enjoy yourself. You don't love yourself, you enjoy yourself. You think you're funny. You think you have a good time when you're traveling. You think you enjoy this and the podcasting. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with enjoying yourself?
I mean, I guess I'm happy I do what I do, and I'm happy it brings joy, and I'm grateful for that.
And you include other people in this. I mean, you went to a Christmas. You had a beautiful Christmas party. You just brought us in. Or your birthday party. It was your birthday party.
No, it was my Christmas party.
It was Christmas party. Okay.
Yeah.
And
you don't know when my birthday is. Just kidding.
Well, I don't know. It's
June 14th, Flag Day. Okay, it's very easy to remember.
All right. So I won't never forget.
Do you know my assistant has the same birthday? Is
That's
that weird?
That is weird. Interesting. Yeah. It's cute. So cute. It's but here's why it's to enjoy yourself the way you do, you can also laugh at yourself. And that's the critical ingredient, right?
Yeah.
Not to take yourself too seriously.
Enough about me. That was a little narcissistic. Anyway. What do we think? Because I did, you know, we talked a lot about the Jada and Will thing in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And we –
Can I just add something to that?
Yes,
away
please.
Away from narcissism?
Yeah.
Anybody that's engaged in these open relationships and polyamory and stuff – you do not judge. Nobody should judge them. They should do whatever they want to do. I can just tell you, if somebody's been working in mental health for 3 decades, it doesn't end well. It may work for a while and maybe – now, a lot of things – what those people will usually say is, well, monogamous relationships don't end well either. True. Absolutely. But it is rare, and I mean rare, that I see these – boundaryless relationships work out. It ends up with a lot of heavy feelings, a lot of problems down the road. There are armies of people trying to teach 2 people how to have a relationship. You know what I mean? When you bring more things in, at the very minimum, you must expect feelings that you don't anticipate. And sometimes those feelings disrupt the primary relationship. They just do. It's just, you're human.
Yeah, I just don't see that where you can keep the same love and commitment that you would have with other people. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people that have an arrangement, especially if you're really wealthy, where you're both like, screw him. I don't want to screw him anymore.
No.
And he's like, I don't care what she does, but I don't want to split up this empire.
It still becomes sort of married in name only or married as a
but
business.
Then
good on them. Fine.
And they might
but
they might live okay lives in this separate compartmental thing.
Yeah.
But they're still not – they still – are like not in love with that person in a way of like true commitment, or one or both are actually lonely, you know?
Right. That usually ends up like Ozark. You know, when things sort of get weird. But – and I'm being facetious when I say that. I don't mean that literally. But I would say, though, that these independent lives, fine, good on them, whatever. But don't then advertise this as a great thing. Because that's the opposite of a really good love relationship. Now, if you want to advertise it as a way a marriage as a business can operate, okay, that's fine. But it's not the thing that a lot of people are looking for, which is real intimacy. And that requires time and commitment and passion and friendship. And you have to feed that all the time, and you know, and to move it – to let it separate or bring other people in, it just gets very – wonky very quickly.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, Kylie and what's his name? Travis Scott. And they had this big Women's Wear Daily or what was it, Vogue? I don't know. They had this big article in there that actually got pulled from the shelves in the aftermath of Astroworld. And it was, you know, beautiful shots of them. Some people got the magazine and it got out. And it was beautiful shots of them and artistic and everything. She pregnant with her second child, Stormy, though. They've never been married. And it was basically like, well, we're committed as a family, but we're not together.
I don't know what that means.
I think what it was.
And then they'll say, oh, I don't need a piece of paper to do that.
No, but I think what it meant, and this is just me analyzing it as like what I see, is I think they really are in love and a couple. But I think they say that because if he gets seen with another woman or it gets out or he does a concert and some chicks come back to the hotel and those girls share it on Instagram, whatever, I think then it's almost like might be a protective mechanism to be like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it right now. Because he's not going to have children with those people and he's not, you know, we have a commitment that
It sounds to me like I'll settle for that because all
right,
I can
I'm
get.
But I'm thinking just because the public, I'm saying the public persona, like almost like I want to be with this person, but I'm not, and I'm not, I'm just saying if this could be her point of view.
Yeah.
I'm a billionaire. This is who I want to have kids with. This is who I like being with. But I'm also smart and based on his business and who he hangs out with and everything, there's an excellent chance that in the next 5 years that we're still procreating and being parents together, there might be a chick who comes forward like the Tristan Thompson girl. You know, that's Chloe's ex or boyfriend. I don't know what they are. So I'm just going to say it right now so that I won't be humiliated when that happens because I'll be like, I wasn't in La La Land.
Okay.
Because everyone wants to say that when these high-profile women that, you know, proclaim their love and have this couple goals that everyone says, and then he is seen as cheating, the woman is so humiliated, and she's like, oh, my God, I wouldn't have cared if you cheated, but now that the world knows, I have to break up with you. Mm-hmm. Like, if you would have just had a wild Vegas night, I really wouldn't have given a shit.
How about they not do that? How about they actually commit?
I know, but I'm saying I just wonder.
To me, that's the part that
I just wonder when you get to the stratosphere of like
we don't know
billionaires and movie stars and rock stars, and it's like I really want this person, but I'm not the chance of him never cheating on me.
My experience
in 2022 and his business and everything.
Yeah, my experience has been. When I see these people in, you know, in professional settings and the door is closed, they're this exactly the same as everybody else, want exactly the same things and are pissed and heartbroken when they don't get it. That's it. Same.
You mean when their spouse isn't loyal.
Yeah, yeah. When they're let down. Same, exact, everything the same. Now they settle for all kinds of things. And then what makes somebody settle, that's the stuff you're talking about, I think.
Yeah.
But and then they'll say, oh, marriage, just a piece of paper. Please tell me any other contract we have that you don't use a piece of paper. Marriage is a contract, and it's the only contract you make with society to stay committed to that person. And it makes a difference when you sign a contract. You think about it. You get through stuff you wouldn't otherwise get through if you didn't have your name on a sacred contract. I mean, it's so absurd when people go, it's just a piece of paper. Yeah, like every contract. Every contract is a piece
point.
Of paper.
Yeah.
So give me a break. Let me just point out – so my 2 points about this thing. One is that kind of relationship is extremely stressful. It is very stressful and people get very spun emotionally. That's just a fact, number one. Number two, the other fact is when somebody behaves in a way that violates normal behavioral boundaries – I've seen lots of those folks too. When you go in the room and shut the door and find out what's really going on, it's way worse than you imagine. Way worse. Whatever causes somebody to act out in a public setting where any reasonable person would go, no, this is the Academy Awards, you know, get up and punch. There's a lot more going on than we know, a lot. And whatever goes public, he's entitled to his confidentiality with that. But the reality is, I promise you, much different than we're ever going to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but no, I mean, I just said, you know, sometimes it can be and now there's a lot of shift blaming on Jada. So I don't want to blame Jada for his actions and his actions we're hearing that he wasn't always a delight on set. He mm-hmm. wasn't always a delight at home.
Did you see his interviews around his book when he came out and talked about the horrible violence in his home?
Right.
And he said, I'm not the person. Will Smith is this. It reminded me of Bruce Jenner going, I created this character and inside I felt like a woman.
Yeah.
It reminded me exactly of that. He said, Will Smith that you know, that's not me. You don't know who I am.
Amazing if Will Smith came out
no,
as a woman?
No, I'm not saying it.
I know, but I just thought that would be fun.
It would be fun, but that's not what I was talking about.
Right.
But it would be so fun. It would be fun. It did remind me of Bruce saying that, because when Bruce talks about that, it breaks my heart. You know, when Caitlin talks about it. So,
well, I mean, when people, you know, and like looking back, and he was on the Red Table Talk. I just saw this clip today. You know, everyone's pulling up these clips. You know, and he says, on your 37th birthday, he's there with his mother-in-law and Willow, the daughter, who's like, you know, 18 or something. And of course, Jada. And he goes, when it was Jada's 37th birthday, the next day I said, I'm going to plan the 40th birthday. It's going to be so epic. I spent 3 years planning it. And, you know, it was going to be this and this place and it was gorgeous and everything. And he goes, and then Jada didn't like it. And Jay and I said, why didn't you like it? I did this all for you. And she said, no, you did it for you. And then Willow goes, and the grandma goes, oh, whew. And I was like,
so you.
I mean, I just thought that was so mean.
But,
and also that the three women were all like.
That's because there must be a load of shit underneath that we don't know about.
Right. I mean, I don't know.
You can either say that she's a heartless narcissist, which I don't think so. I think when women are at their wits' end with men, that's how they behave. When they really, men just are unresponsive to years of complaints.
And also,
that's the way women behave.
Yeah. And I also think, like, you know, and I said this on Nightline, the couple goals thing. It's also a lot of pressure for these couples.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, we are, for not only for society, but for Black America, couple goals. Like, it's just so much pressure. Mm-hmm. It's unfair. Like, I mean, I feel that way about Chrissy, and a lot of people don't like Chrissy Teigen, but just the Chrissy Teigen, John Legend, the cuteness of their family and their dynamic and their fun that we see behind, you know, on Instagram and stuff. I'm like, God. You know, I worry that, and I've even said that, I worry about sometimes these couples wanting to get out, and literally the pressure of the world keeps them in a bad marriage because they're like, I just don't think I can let down the world like this. It's too much of a pedestal that you've put me on.
But to be fair, I mean, people have done that for their families forever, and this is the same kind of sort of satisfying people other than yourself sometimes. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. But so that's my – and you were saying what you and Josh said about –
Josh talked a lot about, you know, that was that slap actually just like, you know, the anger towards his situation at home or what was that all about? And I said, you know, sometimes it's not always the man that's the narcissist and the toxic person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes it can be the woman too. And that's why I wanted to ask you. So what in narcissists, what are the traits that are different between a narcissistic woman and a narcissistic man?
The narcissistic – well, first of all, narcissistic female are less common. They usually manifest as a narcissistic disorder called borderline personality disorder. And when women become sociopath, which does happen, they are very dangerous. They are very dangerous.
And what is a sociopath?
Sociopath is somebody – who they're not a psychopath. Psychopaths really don't have feelings. Like Elizabeth Holmes, and if you watch Dropout.
Oh, I'm obsessed with Dropout.
Okay. Well, they allude to psychopathy with some of the things she says. That's them alluding to her being a psychopath.
Well, that kind of makes sense to me because I'm watching this show, you know, where I'm like, how does she keep going knowing that this doesn't work?
Right.
What is she thinking? That it's just one day she's going to walk in and the lab's going to say it works?
Or we'll pivot to be a different kind of business. We've got all this money or who knows what she's thinking.
Yeah.
But what the key is she doesn't have feelings about it, right? She remember at one point she's talking to Sonny and she goes, I don't feel things. I know I don't feel what normal people feel. Remember that scene?
Yeah.
And she goes, I know I love you, but that's about it. And I thought, oh, there it is. That's psychopathy. Because psychopaths literally don't have a functioning part of the brain where feelings occur. That's different than sociopaths. Sociopaths have lots of feelings, but they don't care about you except to the extent that you can meet their needs. So you're just there for their enjoyment and happiness. They'll exploit you. They'll abuse you. They don't care. They don't care. They have total empathic. They're capable of empathy, but they just don't. Mm-mm. It's all about me. It's all about me. Narcissists lose track of feelings. They don't. That's why women don't make narcissists very often. Usually they do feel things. Like it's hard for women not to feel things. They have this big corpus callosum, so you're attached to this the right side of your brain, which is more holistic, bodily based, feeling connected. And what you get is this borderline disorder, which is actually embedded in chaotic relationships. That's part of the disorder, is that you can't tolerate closeness very well. And the female narcissist. You know, the male, you know, becomes a leader and is very self-assured, and they build a big what narcissism fundamentally is. So let's talk about what the fundamentals are. It's that you have an injury, you stop going to the source of development, which is other people, your primary caretakers, mom and dad. We need fueling from mom and dad to build our emotional landscape. And we could talk about how that works. We actually – the interpersonal neurobiology has all been worked out pretty well now. So there's certain interactions we need with our primary caretakers to develop our sense of self and our emotional regulatory system. When we've been injured narcissistically, we exit that frame and we stop going where we need to get that developmental fuel. And we start looking for ways to feel better in the environment. And one of the ways is to collect from the environment things that make you feel bigger and better and more secure and more invincible. And that's the pseudo-self on top of a very injured core that narcissists develop. And that pseudo-self can be big and obnoxious. And it can be – and because the – you know, emotions
are – And what do you mean? Like gaining fancy cars and things or what?
More like – I mean, you know, Weinstein would be a good example of a severe narcissist. I don't think he was a sociopath. He was just – he just don't care about other people's feelings. And you want to keep getting from the environment. You need a constant refueling of things to make you feel big. Because you've been injured and you feel small inside.
Speaking of Weinstein, I just watched the Playboy documentary, 12 episodes on Annie. And, you know, a lot about Hugh Hefner. And it really came out that he's full-blown rapist, according to these women who shared their story. And I just wonder, because I was like, does Hefner get to heaven? Like, what is – are there people like him that because this became such a routine to just take a girl and give her a pill and have sex with – like a Cosby, whatever, and it becomes so – do they literally even know that they, like, are hurting someone?
No. I would say they typically don't. And but you have to be set up to be insensitive to that, to do that in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And then once you're reinforced by the environment and it's no big deal and everybody's doing it, then it's easy to keep going down that path. But you have to be set up. Your personality has to first be non-empathic. You have to not appreciate the impact of your behavior.
Right.
Right?
Right. They don't, yeah.
And the fact that they do it ongoing, I think, is more the social context for it. It's very deeply disturbing. When you think about it, that was the whole sexual revolution was built on that bullshit.
Right.
Ugh.
I know. It's just crazy when you think, you know, and just how it affected the women so much, you know, throughout their entire life.
And the men never really were aware of it. They didn't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And women weren't allowed to talk about it. They're supposed. It's like, hey, they wanted as much as the man does, and I wanted it, so she wanted it. We just helped her out, made her relax a little bit.
That's the Quaaludes and stuff.
That's the thinking. That's the fucked up thinking. Ugh.
It's crazy. So a couple questions there.
And by the way, the TikTok you were talking about, I did a TikTok on how codependency can be a narcissistic trait.
All right,
It's not immediately obvious how these things are narcissism, but these days they are.
Well, how does that work?
So,
because I'm still confused by codependency.
Yeah.
I still don't really understand who – am I codependent?
In what sense?
I don't understand. Like, who is the codependent? Are you two people dependent on each other? It sounds kind of beautiful when you say that. Like, I'm just very. Is that marriage?
No,
like, what is it?
Codependency is. Let me see if I can define it in a simple way.
The easiest way
is enabling, right?
Okay.
You continue to co-sign someone's behavior that's destructive without caring about what the person is actually doing. You just want to keep the peace or whatever it is that you need.
Okay.
Okay. And what you –
So someone could be treating you badly.
Yeah.
And you – don't really call them on it, or you don't really, you know, stand up for yourself.
Right.
Because you just like, I just want this to end and I'll just suck it up and take it. And even though it hurts me a lot, I'll just shake it off. Does that make that person the codependent?
Possibly. That is a codependent construct, but it's not necessarily so. But having said that, I mean, where it comes from fundamentally is when – remember I talked about the refueling that kids need. Well, if a parent's not – has narcissism or addiction, they're not available for that refueling. And in fact, they get scary to the kids, or they have contagion. A child starts crying. They you're making me crazy, because they catch the child's feelings, right? These are really destructive things in parenting. So if you're loaded, if you're abandoning, if you're having contagion, children just learn whatever my feelings are, I have to hide them, because mom freaks out and drinks every time I have a need, and I got to focus on her and make sure I keep her glued together and take care of her feelings and make sure where it comes from, right? That's sort of an extreme example, but it comes from that kind of situation.
Yeah.
So you end up – and you disregard your internal feeling states. Your emotional landscape gets completely disregarded and cut off sometimes. Narcissism, right? And then you're busy out here. Now you go into the world with that, and you can be a super nice, super caretaking person, but it's kind of a pseudo-narcissism, in that the reason you're motivated to be so focused on other people is every time that other person has a feeling, it motivates your feelings. And you get uncomfortable, or you feel pain, and you need to stop it in that person. You're not assessing what that person's needs are. You just need it to stop. I need to rescue them. I need to save them. I need to make them better so my pain stops.
Right.
And so that, to that extent, it's narcissistic. And so part of codependency is boundary problems, having difficulty assessing where somebody else – your feelings leave off and mine start.
So can – okay, so
– I had that, by the way. I had a big dose of that. I had a lot of therapy to get through that. It's microsurgery to get it.
Well, what was your issue?
Oh, my mom was nutty. I've told you that before here, right?
Yeah, but I just wanted to.
You just want to repeat it.
Well, I didn't know if you were going to share that with the people.
Oh, yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, ask questions. I'm happy to. I am open book. I got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I did remember you told me that, like, you know, when I look at someone like you, I think, you know, my God, if you were my son, I would be so beyond proud. I enjoy spending time with you. And
yeah, I didn't get any of that.
You got like no accolades, really.
No. All I got was, when are you going to do this? And when are you going to do that? Like, what's wrong with you, loser?
Even though you're like an opera singer, a doctor, a beautiful family, TV.
Mm. No. And certainly didn't really want to spend time with me, especially, either. That wouldn't have been something on the radar. Yeah,
that's just so bizarre. That is, I just don't understand.
Susan and I were talking about it yesterday, in fact, and Susan was saying, you know, my mom had this weird life where she had a life before my dad. Do you know this story?
No.
Oh my God, I've never. This is juicy.
Okay, good. Tell it.
Okay, so let me just remind myself to comment on what Susan said yesterday. Bring it all the way home.
Okay.
So. I was on the radio, the guy I wrote the narcissism book with, and he is a fan of film noir, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was curious about what I did on Loveland. He started showing up with me and going in with me at work. And one night he goes, you know, I was telling him the story. My mom was in films and was in a lot of 50s television, like Highway Patrol.
Oh, she was an actress.
She was a opera singer.
Oh, wow.
Who ended up sort of being a singer for big bands.
Okay.
And got picked up, I think, by Columbia Pictures, and did a bunch of Johnny Weissmuller films, and then a bunch of always playing a villain, always a villain, in like Highway Patrol and all these old TV shows.
Yeah.
She did a lot of that stuff. and regaled me her whole life with stories about Carolyn Jones and Barbara Eden and all her friends and Anne Bancroft. These were all her friends, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Fine, fine, fine. Interesting. Love, you know, I admired that. I actually was sort of, yeah. I liked hearing about that. Well, my friend who I wrote the book with was there on the radio one night. And during the break, he comes in. He goes, oh, I found a website dedicated to your mom. I go, oh, really? Interesting. Because in the early days of Google.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, Lean Sansbury was, you know, that left Philadelphia, age 18, married Will something, 60-year-old silent film star. And I was like,
wait, when she was 18, she married a 60-year-old?
Yes, silent film star.
And you had no idea?
Knew nothing about it. Zero. Was married to him for like 14 years or something. Knew zero. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And my friend Mark was like, what, you don't know? I go, no, never, ever. This gets juicier and juicier. You,
okay,
you keep
continue,
going?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So... so I was like, okay, fantastic, interesting. I had a weird reaction. I'm like, somebody owe me some money? Is this he's a film star? Is he that she was wife number six of at 18. Something terrible must have been going on at home to leave Philadelphia
right.
to come out here with a 60 or 55 year old, whatever he was. He was
yeah.
wife number five or six, you know, an elderly gentleman. Came out here. And I found out that, and my sister, I told her, and she freaked out. And I said, my mom was like 85 at the time or something. I said, look, she made it this far. If she wants to take it to her grave, let her do it. Don't do that to her. You know what I mean? I mean she's like Don Draper.
So
it
then,
just
so
didn't
she was
happen.
Married to him for 14 years.
Something
so
like
then,
that. 12
so
years,
at
14
like
years.
Whatever, 33, yeah. 34, then she got married to your dad.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
But hang on, it gets better.
Yeah.
So fast forward a month, I'm doing something. You know, Carolla and I would go out and do these shows.
Like, yeah.
And we were doing one at a big theater in Santa Barbara, and we had a meet and greet before him. And this woman comes up to me and goes, "I have to make an amends to you for my grandfather." And I'm like, what? Your grandfather? She was married to my mom. He was married to my mom, to your mom. And her stepson, where did this come from, was my father. So my mom had a stepson, which I didn't know about. And yeah, and she goes, he lives in Stockton. He's a retired dentist. Here's his phone number. I went, fantastic. I will call him, which I did.
Okay.
And so she was his mom for 10 years. And then if you want to know narcissism, because
yeah.
my mom has kind of a mixed disorder. But one day she sat him down. She goes, I'm leaving. And he never saw her again.
The son, the stepson.
To a child, to an 15-year-old or wherever he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an appropriate reaction.
Yeah.
Like you did that to your stepson, never spoken of again, never saw him again. And he didn't have a lot of feelings about it because his dad was a jerk apparently. And he was so funny. He goes, yeah, every Sunday night, he goes, they would have a party and they'd drink a little bit. This couple would come every Sunday night for years. The gentleman was a character actor. You've seen him. I didn't recognize the name. And he goes, but the woman, he goes, I don't know. Maybe you've heard. She played Granny in the Beverly Hillbillies. And I'm like, what? What's her name? Irene?
I don't know.
I was like, I watched that show my entire childhood. She to talk about Barbara Eden never mentioned this woman that she saw every week because it was too close probably to all
so
this
it was probably on
stuff.
In your living room.
Constantly. That was one of my favorite shows as a kid.
And this was a woman she knew really well.
And every week they were in their house.
Do you think they were swingers?
Irene Ryan.
Irene Ryan. Yeah, thank you. No.
I don't think you're going to get to that part.
No, well, I'm not sure I want to hear that, but so here, so you remember Susan had her, think of my poor kids, all the shit we talk about, the Susan
yeah.
and I talk about, and the you've put on the hot plate a couple times. you proud of yourself? So you know, Susan had that psychic show, right?
Yeah.
She, without announcing it, she brought my mom in twice, right?
Yeah.
One was, what's the name of famous, very famous male psychic? She had him in this one day.
Tyler Henry?
No, before. Old school.
John, I know who you mean.
Not John. Van.
Yeah.
Van.
Yeah.
This psychic Van. Van Prague.
Van Prague, yeah.
Van Prague was there. She's on the phone. He doesn't know who he's interviewing. And he goes, first thing, he goes, we're going to go more than an hour.
It's fine. Like, go ahead. She just has to let me know.
I know. I understand. But I'm just saying don't.
Yeah.
This is too good.
Okay.
My mom comes on the phone. It's Van Prague. And he goes, first thing he says, he goes, your husband's here. And she goes, oh, hi, Mort, my dad's name. And he goes, no. He says he's your first husband. And my mom goes, nope. No such thing. I know what you're talking about.
Right. Because just she never told you.
Total yeah. denial.
But you and Susan knew.
We knew at that point.
Okay.
She came back 6 months later, a different psychic. The exact same thing happened. And she just went, nope. And the psychic got insistent. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. There's no such thing.
That's actually so funny. Because yeah. I remember I asked a psychic that once.
Yeah.
I said, okay, what if, like, you don't want to see your dead husband in heaven? Like, you know, can yeah. you, like, yeah. escape him? Yeah. Like, what the hell? Mm. And I don't think anyone really knows that unless yeah. you get to heaven. But
we
like,
can do what my mom yeah. does, just deny it. And, yeah. and it reminded me of Don Draper in that scene when he was in the psych hospital with Peggy. And he goes, you don't understand. It just didn't happen. And yeah. that was her mindset. It just didn't happen. So what Susan and I were talking about, to bring it full circle, she was going, yeah, she had all these personality problems. And she probably had some bad trauma, no doubt. But she also relinquished her career when she birthed me and already had lots of conflicted feelings about men. And I got the full brunt of that. That's what came down on me, which was you ruined my career. My husband was an asshole. Somebody abused me when I was a kid. Now it's on. Mommy dearest type stuff. Yeah.
Ugh, did you have wire hangers?
No, it was mostly really wild, crazy yelling. Never hitting. Like a lot of emotional
is just,
abuse.
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah. Well, I definitely think there's an element, unfortunately, with, and again, just so bizarre to me, of parents being jealous of their kids. Mm. There's an element of moms being jealous of their daughters when the daughter marries really well yes. and maybe is in a really loving relationship.
Women do that. Let's be
definitely
honest.
Also, with success, if they succeed in something that they yes. felt they gave up for that person.
Correct. But in my case, both of the issues with me were narcissistic, which was I was an extension of them
okay.
and had no existence except what they needed me to do for them. That's narcissism, right? My dad a little less so, my mom explicitly.
Wow.
Whatever success I had, they co-opted. But they couldn't acknowledge me as separate and go, good job, ever.
Mm-hmm.
They just co-opted it as theirs.
Yeah.
It should make you angry. Kind of does make me angry.
Yeah.
But it was at the point where I was like, deep in therapy, whatever. I forgive you. I found forgiveness. My dad was an amazing grandfather, and that was so meaningful to me. You have no idea.
But she was not into the grandchildren.
No. She didn't have it in her. She didn't have the
– I know. I think that's also really interesting too when people are like mad that they're or they bring up the fact that their parents are not into being grandparents.
It's odd.
It is odd, but at the same time, you know, I'm like, well – they did sign up to be a parent, but maybe they didn't sign up to be the greatest grandparent. And then the more common thing is, I can't believe you do this for the grandchildren and you never would have done that for me. It's usually that. It's like the second chance.
I could see that feeling, but we were in survival mode with triplets and stuff, and I was just so grateful to have somebody really involved. He was great. I mean, and they loved him, and so it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. So when they were together and they were helping with the triplets, because you have triplets, would she just like go in the bathroom? Or would she really not participate?
She was I appreciated that she dedicated some manpower and time when we needed to travel and stuff like that, which was much appreciated. But she would like bring a little TV set and watch TV in the kitchen, oddly, wouldn't watch with everybody else, and or would play with the dogs.
Mm.
And so
that is so juicy and weird. Okay, so
not just juicy, but weird.
Okay, so if you are
I'm grateful now. Sure, okay. I'm happy. I have no, I've really no resentments or anything for anybody. I mean, I have a little bit of, hey, you don't do that to a kid. Give me a fucking break.
Right.
A little bit of like, I'm not going to let you off the hook. But I personally don't feel. I had lots of good therapy. Got good attachment to my therapist. I have a great family and relationship, and everything's worked out. So, I mean, and I'm sure that's what my mom would be like, worked out, didn't it?
Yeah.
She would feel justified in all of it, I'm sure.
Well, Peter and I always joke because we watch these shows where, you know, and you these stories of extremely successful people who say, well, my mother wasn't there. Or they never said I love them. My dad never hugged me. And then we're like, what's your story going to be? That we just loved you too much? Like, is that going to be the thing that, like, I don't have a good story because you guys were too around and
you're too gratifying. You didn't let us struggle.
Yeah.
That's kind of narcissistic. That's sort of a narcissistic parenting style, right? I can't stand to see you suffer. I have to quickly stop.
I don't think it's that, but I'm just saying like
I'm just saying that that's we love
right.
Saying you
I'm just saying like you can't do it right because what
Nobody
if the next what if the next generation there's a whole bunch of people in therapy because their parents were too loving.
Yep.
And too wonderful,
correct.
And they were too secure in their own home.
No perfect parent. It does not exist. It does not exist.
Right.
But
so
the bad parenting, so-called, I mean, the abusive parenting,
yeah.
The children go one of two ways. They become the hero or they become the scapegoat. And they either like end up like me and they're doing too much or they end up on the street, you know, bad,
yeah.
Not good. So it's a high stakes game when you do that kind of parenting. When you hit a kid, when Oof. You're too intrusive into them, it goes one way or the other.
Well, okay, so let's say you're in a relationship, you know, a marriage that you want to stay in and you realize, I think, maybe our issues are that my spouse is a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And what if you just go, is there any help for this person? Because they're not going to go to they're not going to go to therapy because they don't think there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
Which someone also said that, you know, there aren't a lot of diagnosed narcissists because they don't seek the help because they don't think
that
there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
So is there a way that you can do something to stay in that without it affecting you in such a hurtful if you had a child that you know was diagnosed with some type of special needs or autism or whatever, then you're going to cut them a lot of slack versus a child that doesn't have any of that.
Yes.
So if you can diagnose your spouse
yes.
with some personality disorder or something like a late in life diagnosis, can that help you stay in it without getting hurt so much?
I think, oh boy, that's a hard question. I think the problems can be solved interpersonally, okay, often. Now, you have to first decide, am I in or am I out? You have to really decide, is it gone too far? Do I feel completely not into this relationship?
Yeah.
Is it too painful or not? But if you still love them, you still have passion for them, you still feel the commitment, and you feel as though it's safe enough – trustworthy enough that you want to make a go of it, okay. First order of business is to stop fighting, really, which is what ends up happening with the narcissist, a lot of fighting. You have to find strategies to keep in your mind.
Do you think they just like to fight? They like want to start an argument.
Sometimes. It depends on what kind. There's different flavors of narcissists out there. You know, there's lots of narcissistic traits these days. But most people are not that bad. And you can sort of say, all right, I'm going to find a way to not have to win these arguments. Because when somebody wins, the relationship loses. So you have to find sort of an area of
peace. That's another thing
I
heard is that you'll never win.
You will not win.
So once you realize you'll never win,
you may not get what you imagine are your needs, too. Mm-hmm. That may not be on the table for you, right?
Right.
If that's important to you, you need somebody, you know, loving and available. You may have to start over.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, if you're with this person, you're with the person because your mom or dad was that way also. So you're already somebody who sort of likes, so to speak, or attaches to people with these disorders. The question is, has substance or something else made this now so big that you can't tolerate it, right? Or just too much time has gone by. But you got to think these things through yourself. And sometimes it requires your own therapist to figure that out. But even though the narcissist won't do individual therapy, they often will do couples therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And often you can sort of get them into the frame where you can improve the attachment between the two people, make it a little more organized and secure. And that helps with all those traits.
Mm-hmm.
It helps with everything. So it really is about the security of attachment. It's interesting when attachments become secure. There's four different kinds of attachments, and adults have attachments the way children have attachments. But when you help somebody build a secure attachment, some of the character stuff settles down if somebody's got issues that way. So that's where I would look to bring them into the fray. And by the way, you're going to be happier too. You may not get all those needs met that you want, but they don't have that. They just don't have it. And you can learn to be grateful for what you do have. Usually there are things that you're focused on that you really do like about that person. Focus on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's also talk about now Kanye, you know, dropped out of Coachella and he says he's going away to get help. You know,
Good.
Will said he's going to some someplace.
Shocking.
And, you know, I guess there are these places now where not necessarily an addict, but like.
Yeah, we call those psychiatric hospitals.
No, I think it's cuter than that.
I know, but that's what they are.
Oh, okay.
We just put them in houses now and bring nurses and doctors and social workers and psychologists and vocational rehab specialists. And
because you can afford it. Because obviously these places
people
are
don't
expensive.
Like the idea of psychiatric hospitals, so we take the actual treatment of a psychiatric hospital and we put it into a different shell.
Well, Kanye said
and to be fair, it's licensed differently and that kind of thing.
Kanye said he's
intensity.
Going away too.
Okay.
But I don't know if he's doing that or if he's – yeah.
I mean, I hope they're not going for like yoga and vegan food because that's not going to help them. Won't hurt, but it will not help them. You know what I mean? They're those kinds of getaways too.
And, right. What do you think with Kanye, with everything he's been doing? What's your diagnosis of that?
He has obfuscated his bipolar diagnosis. His mom used to talk about him being bipolar and that she was in charge of his medication, and that was what kept him nice and stable. She really looked after that problem. He now is in denial. It's called anosognosia about his – if he has serious mental illness. I don't know. Bipolar does get overdiagnosed. Maybe they misdiagnosed him. I don't know. But if he has that proclivity – it's going to get a little rocky. I mean, his mood disturbances are very challenging. So the celebrities have the exact same neurobiological, neuropsychiatric stuff as all of us.
Yeah.
They're not different. They're not special. And to the extent they get special care, they're getting substandard care. That's Michael Jackson. Special care, you end up bad outcomes. Bad outcomes.
Right. What do you think about Britney?
Well,
now that she's
Brittany,
free, and do you follow her on Instagram?
I don't.
How can you not follow her on the gram?
Bless Drew? Her heart. Bless her heart.
She does fashion shows, eight a day.
So good for her.
Yeah.
Wow. So we know she has bipolar disorder. It's not a maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And she had such bad bipolar disorder that her life was so seriously jeopardized that not only was she put on a 72-hour hold, but if you remember, after she shaved her head, which, by the way, is a manic symptom when people shave their head all of a sudden, also face tattoos, another manic symptom, not categorically so, but commonly so.
What do you think, like, if someone does just like a little star –
it's,
or
you know,
like
the
a
big,
gang
you know,
tier,
the,
but you
the,
mean like
the
a
Aaron,
like a
you know,
t- what's his name?
Post Malone. Well, no, they're really like Mike Tyson. He was probably in a bipolar state,
but not a Post Malone because like.
What did he
and
do?
I feel well. I just feel like he has. I just feel like he has so many are on that.
Yeah,
then
I don't
it's
know.
Sort
it,
of like a look.
He and like
maybe just
Davidson
a style.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
it's a little different. It's the.
Well,
peacock
I don't think
over
Pete
the eye.
Has any on his face yet.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Travis Barker, he and Courtney just got married, and he has all over.
His face? Do you have him?
Yeah, hairline. Yeah,
hairline's different. Hairline is different than face. It is.
Interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, hairline is more of the trauma stuff, you know, hair and scalp and stuff. People have trauma do that stuff.
I mean, I can't imagine. Wouldn't that be so painful?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So we know that she had bad enough bipolar that she was on a 72-hour hold. Then now that you're worried about what it feels like.
Yes, I just think.
You like yourself too much.
I have no tattoos. Not going to hurt this baby.
this ship.
Yeah.
So 72-hour hold, then a 14-day hold. To get on a 14-day hold, you actually have to see a judge in the hospital who deems you so severely ill that you cannot leave the house. Very rare
but
to do that.
But, I mean, people, fans of hers would say that was all calculated
no way.
To take
impossible.
Over her money.
Impossible. They don't know who the judge is. The judge is appointed, comes in, does the hearing. Period.
Well, I don't want to go through the whole.
But hold on.
Yeah,
I'm just making
finish,
a case of how severe her disorder was. And then a psychiatrist thought it was bad enough to apply for a conservatorship. You don't get more mentally ill than that. That's as mentally ill as you can possibly be, where you have a 14-day hold and then a conservatorship. That's reserved for the sickest, serious mental illness. So then she went on conservatorship, and it was approved, which is even another level. But all right, well, I won't even argue about that. And she stays in it. Now, she did great in it. I mean, they saved her life by putting her in it. She would be dead now, for sure, 100%, if they hadn't done that. There's often, you know, sort of chaotic drug use and stuff like that that goes along with this, and that's often how they die. But they saved her life. They got her back working. She was, what, 12 years on conservatorship or something, or 14 years?
13.
Yeah, and then wanted to try off. She should try off. I completely 1,000% support that. I could walk out at the Starbucks where I got you your coffee, two guys that needed conservatorship more than Britney Spears, just sitting at the Starbucks. There, a lot of people need conservatorship more than Britney Spears.
And they're at the Starbucks.
And they're everywhere here in Los Angeles. And if so, she wants to try off conservatorship because she's done so well. Okay, give her a chance. That may not go well, but give her a chance. Why not? That's what she wants to do.
I mean, I think it's going fine. I think I think it's a kind of sad that her only outlet is Instagram. And she is sharing way too much on it, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she is such a talent, but I don't think she is ready or knows how to then, you know, go and like do a show or want to do a show. Because here she did these shows for so long. And then I think she was doing so well and she had clarity. And then I think that's when she realized like, fuck, why am I working? I don't get to do what I want to do. You know, and then she was like, and that's when she said, I'm not going to do this next big run in Vegas. And then all this stuff came
but
out.
But imagine you're someone who wants to produce a show with her now. Seems you're not going to be feeling very secure about it. You know what I mean? You may not put the money down to do it because.
What is your prediction about her future as a, you know, as an artist?
I don't have no idea, but she will decompensate. It will happen. I don't know whether there'll be a mania or a depression, but something will happen. And the question is, will she get care? And will she take the care? That's all. If she takes the care and understands she has an illness and listens to her doctors.
Wait, you think she will have a breakdown?
She will have a decompensation.
Is it called?
Decompensation. It's in the nature of these conditions. They get better and they get worse, get better and they get worse.
Yeah.
So she will have a decompensation. I can pretty much promise you. But it may not be for 10 years. You know, and if in those 10 years she wants to be off conservatorship, I
mean, speaking about like Instagram and stars, I was talking about this with Chris Frangiola. Like, it's interesting because it's now every star and, you know, and I was going to say, you know, there's obviously there's something wrong with you to an extent, I say, of people that want to be comedians or even want to be or even want to be like actors or even get off on it. And now we have this place of the internet and everything where there's so many people that can be a star. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, there was maybe 100 stars.
Yeah.
Now you could be a YouTuber, you this and that, and make $16 million a year.
Yeah. And
I don't know who you are. You
right.
Know?
And like, you can have a little cadre of stardom, just a little group of
just
fans.
All you need is a small amount, you know?
Yeah.
And so then you get these stars like Britney and Madonna.
The Madonna thing was weird. What was that?
And when she went on her it's just.
What was that?
But it's just
even
interesting.
She's
got these butt implants and she's 6 years old and she's got this severe plastic surgery. And I'm just like, and she's on, you know, Instagram just trying to get like likes. And I'm just going, my God, you're Madonna. Like, why are you trolling like the rest of us? Like, why are you so thirsty like the rest of us? Like, you're Madonna.
Yeah.
And I get it because it's like anything else. The immediate satisfaction of like putting something up. And I mean, we're guilty of it too. We post a clip and we're like, oh my God, it's at this. It's at this. Oh, why is this one not getting a lot of love? Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know, because it's the immediate of it.
But it's also what it was to me, Madonna, in the first place.
Right.
What drove her to do that is still driving her now.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you still wanted it, and now it's like.
That's sad.
And I said, it's not like someone can really take the phone away from this person. And who's going to do it? Her kids?
No.
The publicist or the assistant that she's
paying?
But
you know what's really
sad?
They're
just there to make her happy.
You know what's really sad is that somebody like that could probably pivot into something really interesting.
Yeah.
If they just really thought
creatively. Well, I don't know if you know this, but Madonna has a podcast coming out. I'm just kidding. But probably. Probably.
Well, but I'm not sure that – I'm just saying that she has a huge following. She's had a huge impact. People want to hear a lot of things from her. You just don't keep doing the same thing. That was that. Let's see what Madonna can do as a 6 year old.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels to me like that's sad that they can't pivot.
I mean, well, she's got this like 28-year-old boyfriend.
Yeah.
She, you know, has the face of like, I don't know, a 30-year-old now with a, you know, and she's, but.
She doesn't look like Madonna anymore.
No, but it is just kind of like, I don't know, there's something just kind of. A bummer about it because it's like you thought, you know, it'd more be like, I'm cool as shit. And I would like to just see her just like not be about like her big fake ass and be collaborating with young artists and be like, yeah. it's your time to shine, but I'm going to like come in here and sing this part or something.
Yes.
Like, why
is Tony Bennett did it demented.
And I mean, I kind of feel like that with Britney, with all she does is put on these brown pumps and do these fashion shows.
What's that brown
and
pumps again you're around, obsessing about? Isn't that your obsession?
I'm just saying, of all the ads, she just doesn't, and she does the same thing and she puts it and she does it over and over and over again. And I'm like, why aren't you like writing a song or singing a song or doing something that's that? Why is it just these cheap clothes off the shoulder?
It's probably outfits. The immediacy of the feedback from that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's just. But
it's like a the pigeons in the Skinner box. We keep going.
What's the pigeons? What?
There was a famous behavioral psychologist at Harvard in the 50s named B.F. Skinner, and he had this thing called the Skinner boxes with pigeons in it, and he trained the pigeons to do things for reinforcements.
Okay.
I'm fascinating your craft.
So the people.
But here's the thing I want you to notice. Here's what I'm going to predict with Britney is you're going to start seeing more extreme makeup. That's your hint that things are going. Watch. It's going to be crazy eye, crazy lip.
You think she's going to do the Julia Fox eye?
What is that?
She does like raccoon eyes. She wipe her makeup off.
Oh, so you're going to see more of that. That's the hint.
I feel like the look is just, yeah, I put on my makeup and I might not wash my face before I go to bed. And then I might add a little more on the next day.
That's fine, but you're going to start seeing.
Well, it's not fine. It's not good skincare.
You're going to start.
I mean, you learned that at like 14.
I must have missed those classes.
Mary Kay came to my house and said, every day that you sleep with your makeup on, it ages your face by 14 days.
Wow.
Yes.
Wonder if she got that science.
Got to wash your face every night.
And reapply our makeup. It'll cost you
$20. Yes, exactly. So. Yes. Uh-huh. But okay.
Goodness. Well, anyway, so keep an eye on that. We'll see how she does. God bless her. She's sort of to me like a tragic figure. I feel bad for her.
Well, a couple more questions.
Yeah.
Another big word everyone talks about is gaslighting.
Yeah.
You gaslit me. I know it comes from the movie of what's the movie? Gaslight. And that's where it comes from. And it's just basically.
Yeah. It's making you feel crazy. It's denying reality to the point that you feel like you're doubting your sense of reality. That's really what it's supposed to be.
And are people really doing this much? I mean, it just seems like...
No, we're overusing the term. The term has become... Gaslighting has become a ubiquitous term for I don't like what you're saying.
Okay.
That's all it's become. It's become so thoroughly overused that it has no longer meaning it has its original intent at all.
Even if a guy is cheating and the wife or the girlfriend is like, thinks he's cheating and is saying this, and he's like, what are you crazy?
You're crazy.
I was playing basketball with the guys and took a shower at the gym.
Right.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
That is he really intenting to really make her think she's crazy or is he just lying?
He's just lying.
He's not out to make her go to an insane asylum.
Correct. Yeah. It's just a certain strategy of lying.
Right.
Which is
I feel like that's where it's getting a little mushy gray area.
I think some of the sort of strategy of gaslighting is that you keep going. You know, she goes, here's pictures of you with this chick. That's Photoshopped. I don't know what you're talking about.
They never just admit it. Yeah.
Never.
Okay.
And there's a lot of that these days. Trust me.
And what about the word triggered? When can we say goodbye to that one?
I hope now. Let's put it to rest right now. Can we?
I mean, I just feel like it's like everything. But it's kind of a genius word because it's like all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, I never realized that, oh, my God, that's triggering me. But, I mean, now people just use it so much and they use it in a way to like make the person feel bad when actually – it should make someone feel okay. Like, it should be like, I'm sorry, that just like triggered a really horrible memory for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, but that's why I'm being weirded.
Well, I'm sorry I did that, but I want to challenge you. Oh, no, you can't challenge anybody. I want to challenge what you're thinking. I want to challenge your way of thinking about this.
That's like, you can't tell me.
You can't do anything.
That's the other thing. When
triggers, these things all put an end to the conversation.
Oh, okay. That triggered me. That puts an end to it. Yeah. So it's because it's not like, the other part is like, don't tell me how to feel. Right. You can't deny. No one can tell you how to feel. And these are my feelings. And, you know, one thing I did learn from the Housewives.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Is they get very upset
when
someone says they're mad at some woman for something that happened at her 50th birthday party or whatever. Yep. And the person goes, listen, I'm sorry if I made you feel less than, that wasn't my intention.
Yep.
And then they say, that's not what you should say. Because I'm sorry if you feel is the root, is like saying that it's not a real apology.
Ah.
So it should just be, I'm sorry I made you feel less than.
Okay.
I know you felt that way. I know that it hurt you. I know that it ruined your night.
Yeah.
But when I was doing it,
yeah,
I was not aware I was hurting you, and I never set out to hurt you. Is that an okay apology?
Of course it is, but you know what you'd get back, which is, well, you should know, or you did know. You're a liar. You're always doing this.
Right,
you see them. They go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous.
I mean, I always think that that's like, now I'm actually like, if I ever say anything, I'm sorry, I'm always like, oh, I can't say I'm sorry if you felt that way. You literally cannot say I'm sorry if you felt that way. People will lose
because
their mind.
It leaves you a little out of the equation. And
I guess that's
it. It's just, you take your piece and own it, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But believe me, that won't be enough. It won't be enough. That's narcissism. That's borderline stuff. I just don't know.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up.
Oh.
Why?
Having fun.
Well, maybe we do some on Patreon.
Okay.
Can we do some more on Patreon?
Okay. So
some more of the riskier stuff.
Okay.
Go to heathermcdonald.net. You're on Patreon for the real juice. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Drew, thank you. Everyone follow Dr. Drew.
Yeah. Come see some of my – I'd love to have the Juicy Scoopers over at drdrew.tv especially.
Yeah.
We do that streaming show. And After Dark, you may or may not like. It's sort of a new incarnation of Loveline.
That's not a good sales
pitch. I don't want your people there to be offended because it gets pretty dicey over there. But
they
if you want more Susan,
the like
Susan
dicey,
gets into her.
They like dicey stuff.
We got used to the stuff that Heather makes us talk about on After Dark.
Okay.
Susan and I.
Good, so, good.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you.
All right, thanks.